the Boston players mobbing.
But Michael Jordan is not only the best basketball player, but he's the most exciting basketball player to ever play.
Tatum fires away, pumps it in.
The Big Three NBA Podcast is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Welcome to another edition of the Big Three NBA Podcast. I'm your host, Chase Rob Blakely. Today, we've got one of CLNS's finest, Joe Sway Pavone. What's up, man? I'm not going to tell you about that Nike swoosh you got on your head, but that's all right. It's all right.
Because you did it, you did it Friday night. I appreciate you.
I'm keeping it going. I got it out of my system Friday night, but we're gonna keep it moving. This episode is brought to you by.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, it is. And as much as I gotta pay props to you, we also gotta make sure we gotta pay props to the bill payers. This episode is brought to you by Indeed.com, HelloFresh, and PrizePicks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network. Sign up now at PrizePicks.com/CLNS and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. And again, we're just going to jump right into things, Joe. You alluded to the game on Friday night and didn't quite go how we thought it would.
No, it didn't.
There was no Jaylen Brown. There was no Derek White. But you had Tatum and you had the rest of the gang, and they built a nice, comfortable lead. Everyone's kind of got their feet up on the desk, kicked back, relaxed. And then next thing you know, the Kings start balling. The Kings start basically they got De'Aaron Fox. The Celtics got De'Aaron Fox because he was basically all that they had going on. But what the hell happened? I mean, how did that a game that the Celtics eventually won? And we'll talk about how they won it. But before that, how it became more of a game, what, from your perspective, what the hell happened that made this a game that for long stretches didn't really seem like it was going to be that tight?
Yeah, man. But you said it, man. De'Aaron Fox went off. And that's the thing. You know, when he gets going, it's like everyone gets on the same page. Everyone is out running the floor. Everyone goes to his pace, right? The Sacramento Kings, I mean, this has happened a lot throughout the season, where they just piggyback off of his momentum, and all of a sudden the deficit goes from double digits down to 5-6. That's exactly what happened against the Celtics. Now, I thought that comeback story was over when the Celtics came back strong in the second half, but then came the second surge, you know, against the Celtics' bench. But I like that. I really do, Sherrod. I mean, we talked about it on the Celtics postgame show. Like, that's great for this second unit, for these bench guys, for guys like Sam Hauser and Peyton Pritchard. You know, obviously it's great that they survived it, but I can imagine for Celtics fans it was a little bit scary, but also a little bit familiar, though. I mean, they do this sometimes, right? They do this from time to time, even when they have all their guys in there, even when all the starters are finishing off, you know, the fourth quarter. So, yeah, it's a little – again, because it's the second unit, I'm not as concerned. But again, I'm glad that they were poised. They were ready for that. They were prepared for that. You know, and I think the Sacramento Kings, we also got to remember, man, they have a lot riding on that game. You know, in terms of playoff implications, everything is really tight in the Western Conference right now. You know, we're down to what, 5 games left in the regular season. So, I mean, they had a lot to play for, obviously, and they've done this. You know, they're known for doing this, for making these comebacks, but. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't what I expected. Again, that second wave is what scared me, but I'm really glad that Joe Mazzulla didn't put his starters in, or at least a couple of guys to try to save the game. You know, he trusted his guys, and rightfully so. I mean, guys like Pritchard and Hauser, who couldn't find a bucket, hit a big one, and also they were able to get the second chance point, you know, for Tillman with the go-ahead bucket at the end. That was good.
Sam Hauser had that might be the worst game he's ever had, like, in his life, where he went 1-for-18. But to your point, though, the thing that, you know, folks in Celtics land are going to remember about that game is him missing a shot or a shot being missed and him tipping it out to Xavier Tillman, who hit the game winner. Another guy that, again, the Celtics aren't expecting major things out of him, but it's good for them to see him in that situation and come through and deliver. But as much as the bench got that opportunity to play and you know, I thought Joe went a little deeper than I thought he would, sooner than I thought he would. It also was a reminder of what this team looks like when you don't have Jaylen Brown and Derek White around. And I know Tatum is their best player. Porzingis, I think, is probably a legitimate X factor. But damn, I'm not sure we're giving JB and D. White enough props and credit for what they mean to this team, because there were multiple stretches where you could see where, damn, if they had Jaylen Brown, this would be happening. Or, damn, if D. White was on the floor, that would have went down. What's your take on just the value that those guys have to the team? And are we giving them enough credit for the value that they bring to this Celtic squad?
I think we are. I think because of what we've seen this year, we are, especially with Derek White, man. Like, he's just really coming to his own. And, you know, everything that we've heard from what Greg Popovich said about him, just having to, you know that he belongs in the, you know, not even the NBA, but just in that tier of just guys that really are really important to a championship caliber team. And that's exactly what happened this year. You know, a big reason why he was able to settle in there with after having last year under his belt, and he just looks a lot more confident. But yeah, you know, I think with Jaylen, you know, having the best season of his career, if you ask me, just in terms of just he just looks like he's able to be himself, you know, like he just before he was a bit reserved. And I know you remember those days, right, Sherrod? I'm not just talking about like when he was a rookie or whatever, but like even years ago, a couple of years ago, I feel like it was sort of like he was still trying to find his own way. And, you know, of course, the contract extension, long term and generational wealth, all that stuff matters. I mean, it helps, I should say. But it also helps just to know that your organization has a place for you and they see you as a cornerstone. And I think that was a big part of it as well. You know, being next to Jason Tatum, I think he's sort of he's found his way, you know, and he's found his mark on this team. So what they mean on both ends of the floor, I think it's a big part as well, especially when you look at what happened last night or Friday night, rather, when, you know, the Sacramento Kings didn't have that second pressure applied on offense that it's really hard to slow down once he gets going. And clearly he's been rolling. If you look at his stats or his numbers, his offense ever since the All-Star break, and it wouldn't have been any different Friday night. So these guys are tremendous assets to this team. But, you know, when you look at someone like Derek White, maybe a key underrated a year ago or so going into the postseason, now I think it's a completely different story. I mean, you got Coach Mike Brown talking about him, you know, before that Kings and Celtics game. And he's just like, man, you know, these guys have all stars. And then they have Derek White, you know, and I feel like that was his way of saying, like, he's just as valuable and rightfully so.
There's definitely, I think, more awareness of what Derek White can do now. Whereas last year, it really was just like, damn, where did that come from? Like, this is the dude that, you know, he couldn't even get a D1 offer. And now look at him, he balling out. Right.
He can run the offense. He can defend. He can, you know, essentially just change the complexion of a game. You know, guys like that are just really valuable to a team that's obviously, you know, trying to win a championship and doesn't have to be your second or third option on offense, essentially, you know. It's a huge asset.
It is. And a huge asset, particularly when you talk about the playoffs, where you're going to need all hands on deck to achieve the goal for this team, which is to win a championship. But between now and the duck boat parade, you're going to have to make sure your guys are ready to ball out, and particularly going into the playoffs. So with these last four or five remaining games, and I got three buckets I want you to carry for me in this one, Joseph.
Okay.
What do you expect, or what do you want to see in these last few remaining games from the starters, from the bench, and from Joe Mazzulla? And we'll start with the starters first. What are you hoping to see from them in these last five games?
I want to see some rest, Rod. I mean, look, I'm not saying pull them all, you know what I mean, sit them all, but hey, everyone take turns on nights off. You know, you guys gonna take a couple of days, you know, you couple guys gonna, you know, take the night off. All right, me too. You know, like something like that, because I love this momentum we're seeing from Porzingis. You know, I don't want them to slow that down, so I wouldn't like him to just be pulled and just be, you know, you just sit him for these next five games, but obviously get a couple of rest games in there as well, but keep that momentum flowing. I don't think anyone's having more fun on this team this year than Kristaps Porzingis, man. Like, the guy just hasn't stopped smiling since October. And, you know, with the playoffs coming, he feels it. He feels the intensity. He feels the city, you know, the vibe right now, even though he doesn't have a whole lot of playoff experience, obviously, when you look at his track record. So I just love that momentum he has going on both ends of the floor right now. He's averaging like three blocks in his last four games or so. You know, his points are up. His percentages are up. But, you know, to answer your question, Sherrod, just rest, you know, get these guys rested for sure. And especially guys like, you know, Jaylen Brown, who has to kind of deal with a new level of discomfort, I want to say. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. And let's be honest, he's not going to be transparent with us, Sherrod. He's never going to go up on that podium and be like, hey, man, this hand's been killing me today.
Yeah.
And look, that's something that I worry about the playoffs, not him going up there and saying that, but him having that discomfort and then it's showing on the floor, like, you know. So hopefully that's not the case, but yeah, you know, get these guys some rest and make sure that this closest is the best version of themselves going into the postseason. That's what's most important.
Yeah, for the starters, I think it's that fine line between rest and rhythm that Joe Mazzulla has to, I think, really take to heart. And with Porzingis, I got to be honest, I don't understand why he would not be jumping over the moon with jubilation every day. I mean, think about this. You are making max money as the, at best, third option on your team. And you're coming to a team that was built to win a championship that needed maybe one more stretch big to fill it out, which is exactly what you do. And you don't have the pressure that you had when you were in New York, when you were the face of the franchise, even though you were not ready for that. So not ready for that. You go to Dallas.
He'll tell you himself. He'll tell you that he wasn't ready, right?
Yeah. And then you spend some time in Dallas, and that wasn't really a good fit because they wanted you to be that number two guy, and you sort of could do that, but you had a lot of health issues and banged in and out of the lineup, so that didn't work out. And then you went to the dumpster fire of dumpster fires in the NBA, the Wizards. And so, yeah, you put up big numbers and you stayed
humbled
healthy.
Them real quick, right, Sherrod? Humbled them real quick. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So then it's just like, look, if you don't want to be that top dog, you're gonna wind up in a crappy situation in Washington. So when the Celtics came calling for him, you saw on his representation side of things, they were doing anything and everything to make that happen. It was just like, y'all want to do an extension? Okay, we'll do an extension. You need to take a little bit here. Yeah, we go. Whatever we need to do to get out of Washington, let's make this happen. And so Porzingis has every reason to be excited about this because this is the opportunity. I mean, to me, I don't know if there's any player making that kind of money that's in a better situation than Kristaps Porzingis. You are playing number one, face of the franchise. You're making face of the franchise money as not the wingman, but the wingman next to the wingman. I ain't mad at you. I am not mad. And that's why like people are like, I can't believe he's so happy. I'm just like, why the hell? What they gotta complain about? There's literally nothing for that man to complain about. Now,
for real. And plus, look, the system is designed for him to succeed. Right. Man, that was missing from this team last year. Whether you want to match up, you know, look at the flaws against the Heat, or you know, look at the flaws defensively, just having that presence. I mean, you see it, you know. It's not just his stats on defense. It's just you see guys literally, you know, hesitate in the paint. You know, they had a double thing like, oh, shoot, here comes Porzingis. You know, like it's just that extra pressure that makes the defense all the more devastating when it's at its best.
Yeah. So he's been really good.
Prize Picks is America's number one sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get out of the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Now get in on the playoff action. Win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 in just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play. You can make a pick and submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. This week on Prize Picks, I'm selecting Jason Tatum to dish out more than 5 assists and for his teammate Jaylen Brown to have more than 22.5 points. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit matchup to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks.
And the bench has had its moments where they've been really good against the Kings. Not so much. But what are you hoping to see from that group going forward, though? Because there's a number of guys that I think there's a couple guys that have pretty much solidified themselves in the rotation. But there's still, I think, another two or three guys who might be able to sneak in a spot duty here and there. What are you hoping to see out of that second unit these last 4 or 5 games?
Energy, man. I think that's the best way to put it, especially on both ends of the floor. And you have the personnel to do that now with guys like Hauser, Horford, sort of your anchor there, and Peyton Pritchard, man. What a – I don't want to call it a 180, but, I mean, it's not like he was slacking, but he's just taking his game to new heights this season, especially in the last couple of months, man. He looks so comfortable in that, you know, secondary role as the distributor, as a defender, you know, and obviously as a scorer, you know. And it's not just about the 3-point shot now. He's so much more comfortable attacking the paint. You know, if guys give him that lane, he's going to take it. He's going to finish. You know, he's going to get to the free throw line. And he's going to have a couple words for you. You know, sometimes if you get into his personal space too much, he's not comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, I just love how his personality this year is just completely. And yeah, the contract extension helped as well. But I also think just getting those reps in and being given that opportunity, you know, extended opportunities, which wasn't always the case last year, where it sort of felt like if he wasn't giving you a whole lot of offense, he was pulled, you know, like almost right away. So yeah, just to answer your question, man, constant energy on both ends of the floor. And I'm not worried about Horford, you know, in that regard. Not worried about Pritchard, honestly. And Hauser falls in that same category, to be honest with you, man. I just, the only thing I'm worried about during the playoffs is if like the offense gets really, really dry. Like, you know, the drought sometimes it happens with these guys.
Right.
But you know, that's why you have the best starting five in the NBA, essentially, you know, with these guys. So you can mix and match as well. But I think having those three rock solid guys, with guys like Cornette who can come in there as well, you know, Tillman, you know, guys are in foul trouble up front that can help you in you know, defending and giving you a little extra effort on the offensive end as well. But I just think those three guys, man, that's their role, you know, bringing that constant energy every time they're on the floor.
Yeah, with Pritchard, I mean, he has done what is a bit atypical as far as guys get the money, guys start to slack off.
Yeah,
Pritchard got the money. Yeah, Pritchard got the money, and he started balling. He was just like, "Oh, y'all paying me how much? Oh, I got to make sure that y'all understand that y'all getting y'all gonna get this is a bargain for y'all. Y'all do realize that. Exactly. And once I start playing, y'all gonna realize how big a bargain I am." So he's been really good, I think, about just validating the money and validating the opportunity and validating the roster upheaval that Brad went through to get him in position. I mean, sending Malcolm Brogdon out. I mean, he sent out, you know, the freaking former defensive player of the year and a sixth man of the year for your ass. I mean, if you don't feel that this team, this franchise, that confidence in you, I don't know what your problem is. Because they sent out two players who distinguished themselves among the elite of the elite in the NBA, and you playing like 8-9 minutes. But they're just like, well, we got to figure out a way to get you more minutes. So I think I love the fact that Pritchard has not taken, you know, the faith that they have had in him for granted, that he's actually been a baller this year. And he deserves major props for that.
He's comfortable, man. He's relaxed out there, man. That's what I love about it, because you can just tell. And even in the post-game interview, when he's up on the podium, he's just like, all right, what we got? You know, like, he's answering the questions more thoroughly now. You know, he's giving you more insight a bit more, because he's kind of give you the cliche answers a lot those first couple of years, first couple, two, 3 years.
Just like, you got to fire off like this? Seven.
Yeah, you got to fire off like seven questions to get a good 2-3 minute conversation with this dude going. But not anymore, man.
He figured the game out. He figured the game out. He's like, look, I'm going to give him a little something, and they're going to keep coming back. As long as I keep balling and have a reason to be on this podium. Because that's the thing. You got to ball out to be on the podium. Because if that weren't the case, I mean, we'd have Grant Williams up there every week. If it just, whoever you want to give you a good soundbite.
Because he wants to talk, right? Exactly. He got no problem talking. Exactly. Right.
So we love when Grant Williams had a good game. That means, okay, Grant going to talk today. Okay, we got a reason to talk to him. But one of the other keys to Pritchard's play and to that bench's play is just the roles that Joe Mazzulla has been putting them in. And obviously with these last five games, you know, you're trying to firm up your rotation, figure out who's going to be in, who's going to be out, and just all those really minor little detail type things. What are you hoping to see from Joe as a coach? Like, is there something that you haven't seen as much of that you'd like to see down the stretch? I got a couple things, but I'm curious, what are you thinking?
Oh, man, so this one at the very, very top of the list, and it's just like a gap for everything else, and that's plays at the end of the game. Like some
facts, my dog.
Right? Like some kind of trickery, something that you've been saving, but you guys work on damn near almost every single time you guys have practice. You know what I mean? You pick the time in practice, just be like, hey, let's run that play real quick. And it's like, coach, you've never once even called on this play. You know, hey, let's get it ready. You know what I mean? So then when that moment comes, we're going to be like, okay, that's what they were waiting for, that perfect opportunity. Something like that, you know, because the ISO, Jason Tatum thing, it's getting a little stale, Sherrod. I don't know about you, man. It's getting a little stale for me.
Dude, I'm beyond stale. I'm at that point where like this has become a scientific experiment, a la moldy, like moldy bread, you know, when you just
It's
keep
like
it
your
out there
teacher's
for,
not working, man. This ain't it,
yeah,
man.
you gotta show me
This is
something,
not
give me
it.
something different. Yeah.
Right. Hey, if he's going off, if he's doing one of those takeover games, which he's got a few under his belt, let's be honest, let's give it to him. A couple of historic or career milestone performances throughout his postseason play. I get that. But if that's not the case, man, surprise us every once in a while.
Well,
You
see,
know, something involved with Derek White, maybe. You know what I mean? Give me something or Hauser off a curl or something. Three. I don't know, man. But hopefully that's the case. I would love to see that in the playoffs. And obviously, it's not just Joe Mazzulla. I shouldn't just put that all on him. Like, it's coaching staff as well. Everyone brainstorming. And hopefully, there's some play, say, designed exclusively for the postseason. We'll see.
I'm with you on that. And here's my biggest reason for that. Well, actually, a couple of reasons. First, you have an incredibly talented squad, guys that
Yeah.
can do some amazing things.
Got
And to
options,
me,
man.
when you
Yeah.
get in that situation where you're looking for one bucket to win, you need to utilize the versatility at your disposal. If
Yeah.
you've got to call
Yeah.
an inbound play, an ATO play, potentially win a game or force overtime or something like that, it shouldn't be ISO Tatum. That to me.
Right.
One of the things about Brad Stevens that I love, and I hate going to the coach comparison thing, but it's just the
Yeah, but
truth.
yeah. As soon as you said ATO, though, I was like, oh, remember the Brad days? Like, I
Brad
literally, that's the first thing that popped in my head
Brad kept
when you
you
said
on
that.
your toes because you did not know what he was going to do because you didn't know who the
Yeah,
play was going
man.
to be designed for. And when I look at Derek White, who makes a lot of fourth quarter clutch shots, when I look at Jrue Holiday, when I look at Porzingis, when you start going down to JB, most of those guys are better in that moment than Tatum. The stats don't lie. Tatum has not
Yeah,
been a
seriously.
productive end of game performer. And again, for a guy that has so many positive attributes about him, and that's the one negative, your concern is how can we buffer that? How can we make that be not such a problematic thing for him? And to me, the answer is pretty damn simple. Use the fools around him. Derek White, Porzingis, you name it. They've got
Decoy.
some. They've got
Use him as a
some.
decoy.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you see them, and you know what they? And they did
Yeah.
that. They did that.
Yeah.
I can't remember which game. It was a game recently where Tatum did. I guess he. Oh yeah. Jaylen Brown made like a mid-range shot, but they used Tatum as a decoy, diving to the basket. That defense
They got the double
shifted.
team. Yeah,
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 they
yeah,
shifted
yeah.
just enough, and the ball just came out to Jaylen Brown, had a mid-range jump shot that he was able to knock down. And I'm thinking,
Yeah.
like, you do. I keep telling myself that Joe is going to do those type of things come playoff time. Joe is going to do those. I keep
That's
telling
what I'm
myself,
hoping,
and
man.
it's I'm going to talk it into existence, is what I'm doing. I'm going to talk it into existence because they have a ridiculous amount of options. I mean, if you go to Milwaukee and they have to come up with something at the end of the game, it's either Dame or Giannis. That's it. You
Yep.
know, Connaughton's not getting that shot.
Nope.
My man with the crazy eyes. He's not getting that shot.
Those Middleton days are over, man.
Middleton
Remember
ain't
those
getting
days? He used to
Middleton.
cook the Celtics,
Oh man, I
man.
mean, he had the frying pan and the butter just sizzling, waiting for the Celtics to jump in because he
Now
couldn't.
he's clicking. Now he's clicking for triple doubles, man. Sherrod, you see that? The other night, man.
Man.
He got mad at Doc, and Doc's like, "That's what you're thinking about right now."
This is
And he still gave it to him. He went back into the game and got his rebound or whatever he needed. He's like, all right, 10, 10, and 13. You happy now?
Exactly,
Sit
exactly. And it's
down.
bad in Milwaukee. But the Celtics have so many different options. And I just really want Joe, particularly in those moments of crisis when you need a basket, don't just lean on Tatum.
Yeah,
And
man.
I think, Joe, he's got to get past that. Because and here's the thing about it. It's the type of thing that when, let's say they need a bucket, and let's say they use Tatum as a decoy, where they similar to what they did earlier this season. And they go in the game, and people ask him, why didn't you go to Tatum? To me, the answer is simple, because we wanted to make the best basketball decision. And in that moment, using him as a decoy was the best basketball decision because we knew that would create a more favorable matchup at another
Yeah.
position. It's really not that complicated. It
Right.
really isn't. And I really, really wish Joe would look to that more than he
And
does.
yeah. And it's funny, Shrub, because the way you just worded that, man, that sounded like a Joe quote. You know what I mean? Like, it
I
sounds like
did that.
the Joe he would
I channeled my inner Joe Mazzulla on that one.
Like, if someone were to question him about, let's say, I don't know, Derek White in the corner threes, I don't know, let's just say hypothetically, and he misses, right? Mm-hmm. That would be his answer for, well, why not put Tatum in the situation? Why not, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's the kind of, you know, that's the thought process right there. But it hasn't been the case. It's just been, hey, throw it to Tatum and see what he can do. You know, or no timeout at all. No timeout at all, right? That's been a thing. And look, that we're sort of – that's kind of in the rear view at this point, rear view mirror, you know, the whole timeout thing. That's kind of last year.
Right.
You notice how after the Kings game, though, I feel like he was a little like – he got in front of it when he was just like, you know, like, Pritchard got the ball. I didn't think it was appropriate. We're like, it's all right, coach. We're going to ask you about that. You good? Yeah. You good?
Yeah, I mean,
but, yeah, let's see if he can – let's see if these guys are ready for it, obviously, because – I don't want this to be like a thing that they just started practicing, you know, a week or so. You know, again, I hope this is something that they've been working on, you know, throughout the course of the regular season.
Yeah, so. And the thing for them is the way the rest of the Eastern Conference is shaken up outside of themselves, they literally have no idea who the hell they're going to play. When you start looking at teams 2 through 10 and 2 being Milwaukee, the way this season is shaping up, the way things are looking down the stretch, it's not a major stretch to see Milwaukee go from 2 to play-in status, where they play like there's a 7th or 8th team in the East. And conversely, it wouldn't be a shock if a team like, you know, right now Philadelphia, which is kind of, you know, they got Joel back. They could easily bump up to like 2 or 3 potentially if they get it rolling. So, again, looking at all these teams and looking at where they are now, I got a few teams in mind that I think – will give the Celtics trouble. I don't think any of the teams will beat them in the best of 7, but there's some teams that will make them work harder in the first round than I think they would want to. I got my teams. Who are your teams?
So the
you better not say 2 through 9. Yeah, I just need 2 or 3 teams. I don't need that damn 7 teams. Don't be that dude.
No, I won't do that. I can't stand people do that.
They're all really good teams. I can't pick one. Stop.
Yeah, I don't know, man. They just give you 3. It's like, yo, pick one. Man, I'm still gonna go with the Miami Heat, man. Honestly, I just think that would be like, yeah, man. Like, damn. I don't know. Like, I mean, the Bucks are obviously like one of those teams as well, but I don't think it's gonna happen. I mean, the absolute hardest team though. I just think in terms of if you were to max out like the likelihood. You know what I mean? And like in terms of like if you look at the percentages, whatever Vegas got going right now, the Heat is still that team. But if you look at, like you said, anything could happen. Probably the Bucks, if that were to happen. But I don't know, man.
All right. Well, Joe Sway, you got the Miami Heat as a team that you're worried about. I get that. They've had the Celtics number. They've given the Celtics some problems in the past. Okay, I get it. They got Jimmy Butler. Momentum,
man.
I get it, but listen, the team that I am worried about if I'm the Celtics seeing them in the first round is the Indiana Pacers, and here's why. First of all, they got a hell of a coach, Rick Carlisle, first and foremost, one of the best coaches in the game. Second, this is a team that, I got to be honest, of those teams in that bottom third of the East, they seem to have a little bit of, I don't know, little brother syndrome when it comes to the Celtics. Because Neesmith and the rest of them looking at it like, look, y'all may be nice, but, you know, we think we pretty good, too. And they play with a different kind of, like, chip on their shoulder than a lot of other teams do.
Yeah. Hyped,
and number three, this is a team that has waxed you before. They know they can beat you. So they're coming into this thing completely ignorant of the fact that we should be losing this series in 5 games. They're coming in thinking that, you know what? All we got to do is get one on the road and then maybe get 1 or 2 at the crib and then pressure. The pressure's on them. Right. We'll just keep playing freely. And to me, those are the teams that are most dangerous. The teams that are good enough to beat you if you let your guard down and smart enough to not get comfortable when they're ahead. Like Indiana is, and Rick Carlisle will not let that happen. So to me, that's one team I don't want to see in the first round. Because I think that they can make your life extremely miserable. I don't think they'll win the series, but I could easily see that being a 6 or 7 game series. And you have to exert way more energy and focus to put them away than you would if, let's say, you played Miami Heat. Because here's the thing about the Heat. I think if that's their first-round opponent, I'm going to go out on a limb and say they'll sweep them. And I'm going to tell you why. Wow. I'm going to tell you why. Because they will go into that series with – a level of focus that we ain't seen. They're not going into that series looking to win. Yeah. They're going into that. That's look, true. They look at the Miami Heat as a really full-size gnat, and they're taking a sledgehammer times two at them. They're not just going to try to beat them and get them. No, they're going to try to crush them into the ground. They may average more margin. The margin of victory might be in 20 points per game. Neighborhood. They are going to try to destroy that team.
Really?
They will try to bury them in a way that we have not seen them try to bury anyone. And they'll do it. Say, we're just playing basketball. It was never personal. That was just a team. Oh, it's absolutely yeah, personal.
It's like it looks personal.
It's yeah. going to be so. Miami is the one team I'm not worried about, and in part because of that, but also Miami's just not as good this year. I mean, before they had yeah, I thought a decent amount of solid players, but not spectacular. But when you get past Jimmy Butler, T. Rose, my dude, Tyler Hero, who ain't defending nobody, never has, never will. I'm not worried about that team. And then when my man tried to get into it with Jaylen Brown, Duncan Robinson tried to get into it with Jaylen, last time. You better believe Jaylen. He ain't gonna say nothing about it now. But Jaylen don't remember that. Jaylen will be looking to put him in a spin cycle and on a poster.
I just think it would be like a 6 or 7 game series. That's the thing. Again, I don't think it would be the Miami Heat could beat the Celtics. And if it did happen, that would be tragic, honestly.
I don't think it could beat them in 6. I mean, I don't think it'll go 6.
You don't think it'll go 6? I mean, I just think it's the Miami Heat are one of those teams where but the Celtics, they're way more dangerous in a first round matchup than later down the road. Like down the road, Celtics would be locked in. I think it would be a much favorable series for the Celtics if that's the case. But yeah, they're going to try to ride the wave. I mean, what are they, 6-4 in the last 10? You know, and the Pacers, man, I hear you. I hear you, especially with the offense. And, you know, when they lost Mathurin, you know, I felt like they were going to drop off of it. But man, they got guys stepping up, you know, two-way players or, you know, what was this guy? Rookie guys, you know, guys that, you know, have just stepped up big, you know. So yeah, I mean, the Pacers, you're right, though. They do have, like, a little chip on their shoulder when they play the Celtics, man. Maybe it was the Nesmith thing and, you know, what happened with the in-season tournament. If you're the Celtics, man, you should take that personally, honestly. But I just wonder if they can defend, you know, well enough to slow down the Celtics. That's my only thing. But in terms of scoring, no question. I mean, they're the top team for a reason, you know, in terms of leading the league in scoring. Celtics are right there, you know, breathing down their necks. But obviously they can keep up in terms of scoring with the Celtics, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That'd be a great matchup, man. First round matchup.
It would be. One of the things let me
ask you this real quick, though, Sherrod. I mean, we talked about this a little bit Friday night on the Celtics post game show, but when guys like Tyrese Haliburton, for example, right? Like, that's another guy. He gets going. And we saw that against the Celtics earlier this season. And again, this is sort of like this thing I've been talking about. Of late I just feel like the shift of your guards, you know, once they get going, and obviously the other guys are involved as well, the three-point shots flowing, the transition offense, you know, Celtics can't stop bleeding or whatever. Is that something that we should worry about with the Celtics? You know, is that one of the keys to beating the Celtics, where you need one of those top-tier guards, scoring guards like Haliburton, you know, to get it done? You think that's something to it?
There's something to that, but I think the Celtics counter to that, and I think this is where I think Joe Mazzulla is going to make the kind of adjustments that are going to be like, oh, wow, that was a nice adjustment. I think you'll see Jaylen Brown on a guy like Haliburton. I think you'll see some Jrue Holiday, obviously, and you'll see some Derek White, but I think you're going to see JB on him a good bit, because JB has the athleticism and can deal with, I think, those shifty guards a little bit better because he's longer and he's thicker. And so – and he hasn't lost a step. And Jrue has. I mean, Drew's still a really good defender, but he's lost a step, which to me, at his age, playing the way that he does and as long as he's played, it's absolutely inevitable that he will have lost a step at this point. But he's still a really, really good defender. But I think against a team like Indiana, I would want to see Jaylen Brown on Haliburton a little bit more than normal, just because I think that gives you the best chance to neutralize him. You're not going to shut him down because he's too good for that.
But you
can neutralize his impact to some degree, making, you know, those floaters that he likes to shoot more contested, not allowing him to get to his spots where he can just raise up on you, and respecting his three-point shot. That was something I didn't think the Celtics really did as good a job with, respecting his three-point shot. Well, speaking of shot,
That's the thing, man. Oh, I was going to say somebody along those lines as well. The Damian Lillards and, you know, even the Tyrese Maxeys. I mean, these guys are coming. You know what I mean? There's a lot of these top tier guards in the Eastern Conference. I would throw Jalen Brunson in there, but I don't know, man, with the Knicks, with the news coming out of New York with Julius Randle and all that. But, yeah. Hey, you never know. I'm just saying that there's guys like that that'll be standing in the Celtics' way. So I wonder how they respond to that.
Yeah, and I think that because the Celtics have so many different types of defenders on the backcourt and on the wing positions, they can figure out a way, I think, over the course of a seven-game series, how to neutralize certain guys. You know, and you know, one guy, we're not going to ever talk about him as an elite defender, but Sam Hauser does a pretty damn good job of staying between the basket and the guy he's guarding. And when you get to the playoffs, that's half the battle. I mean, you don't want guys – if guys are going to take a lot of shots, take them over – having to shoot over a 6'4", 6'5", guy who's not giving them the space they want. Hauser's pretty good about closing in or closing out, I should say, and contesting shots and not letting guys get by him. People say, well, what about De'Aaron Fox? He got by him. I'm like, De'Aaron Fox get past damn everyone. I mean, that's what he do.
Yeah, but shout out to Pritchard though. He beat him to the spot, so to speak. You know what I mean? I'm not saying he blocked it or whatever, but he was there for the potential game winner. So that was a good spot.
That was good to see. And just the way the bench was able to deliver in that moment. I mean, Hauser came up with the tip out to Xavier for the game winning shot, and then a good contest on the other end of the floor in the last few seconds, because Sacramento had a couple of really better than average looks. They weren't wide open, but they were pretty damn good looks in that situation. Before we go out, Josue, I wanted to talk about, one of my good friends. I mean, and I do consider he's one of the few players that I would actually consider a friend, Chauncey Billups.
I think I know. Yeah, there you go. When you said the segue earlier with Mr. Big Shaj,
the Hall of Famer.
Give him his flowers, man.
I can finally say that. But here's the thing. I'm having covered Detroit Pistons when Chauncey was there, I got to see his evolution and growth into being, one of the best players of that generation. It was an underrated defender. To me, the way that we talk about Sam Hauser as far as like keeping guys in front of you and contesting shots, that's kind of what Chauncey did. I'll never forget when Chauncey made his first All-NBA defensive team and I called him up and he thought I was bullshitting. He was like, come on, man. What are you talking about?
He's like, that's not funny.
He was like, that's not funny. This is a joke. And so I had to have the PR guy call him and say, you trust that he made all NBA defense? And so we get this damn interview over with. But the thing that, when I look at his growth and evolution and just look at the accolades that he's racked up, I find it interesting that this comes at a time when another former Celtic, Rajon Rondo, announces his retirement. And it gets me to thinking, a lot of people thinking about Rondo's chances of getting into the Hall of Fame. When you see a guy like Chauncey go in and you look at his body of work, which isn't all that different than Rondo's, are you encouraged that Rondo will get in or are you not?
I'm encouraged. I am. Well, for a couple of reasons. The numbers, or a few reasons, I should say, the championship, I think the second one, really helps his case.
It does.
And the last thing is, I would say, is the influence. I mean, like, he's sort of like the last of a dying breed, you know. And speaking to someone who watched a generation of past first point guards, you know, and I feel like Rondo was kind of like one of those last of those prototypes, if you will, right? Yeah, he'll get his buckets as well, but he was always, hey, I got to make sure everyone else is good, and then I get mine. And that was always the case, even throughout his prime years. So with Billups, it's interesting because I feel like he was more of the score-first point guard, you know what I mean? Sort of, I don't want to say started that evolution of what we're seeing now, but it was kind of like, oh, wait, well, this guy can get buckets as well. You know, it's not always about setting up your guys. You know, obviously that's a big part of it. You're running the offense as well, making sure everyone else is on the same page. But hey, if you're cooking, keep going. You know what I mean? So I think those are really good examples of two guys that obviously, in my opinion, I shouldn't say obviously, because maybe people don't agree with it, deserve the Hall of Fame for sure. And I just think that those are the reasons, and especially with Rondo. I think the second championship with the Lakers, I think helped as well. But I just think when we're this many years removed from what the NBA used to be, or at least before this, the surge and the surge of all these score first point guards, you know, the top tier, some of the elite greatest of all time, and the, you know, the Steph Currys and the Lillards and all that. I think you look back to someone like Rondo and say, man, like, we might not see someone like that for a while. I'm not going to say ever again, but it's just nowadays it's secondary for point guards. And, you know, you see so many great point guards in the league, good point guards in the league. You know, it's getting crowded. You know, it's really hard for point guards to kind of stick around the NBA, you know, because there's always a new wave of them. And I just think a lot of those guys, it's just, that's just not the priority. You know, you want to make yourself more valuable in offense as being as the three-point shooter and all-around scorer. And I just think someone like Rondo, man, he had the complete package in terms of what a guard's supposed to do for you. So, yeah, man, get him in there. You know, I would love to see Rondo in there for sure.
The thing about Rondo that it's always going to be a separator for me from him and a lot of other point guards is – not only did he elevate his play in the postseason, he elevated his play in the postseason by playing with not one, not two, but three other Hall of Famers. And he was better than them in a number of major, high impact, everything chips all in type of games. Yeah, and to me, when it becomes something that isn't just something that happens every now and then, it becomes a habit. It becomes something that is an expectation of you. I mean, playoff Rondo. Before, you know, when we get to this point in the season, when he played, we're starting to talk about, oh yeah, the postseason. You know what that means? Playoff Rondo.
You know what time it is?
Exactly. Yeah, man. For a player of that character to have that be part of who they are, playing with the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen of the world, and you outplay them in those major games, and the thing about it, they expect that of you, and they are encouraging you. They are supporting you to be that dude in that moment. And to me, as much as I love Chauncey Billups, to me, I have an easier time seeing Rondo in the Hall of Fame than I did Chauncey. I felt Chauncey would hopefully get in at some point, but I really wasn't confident. But Rondo, way more confident that he'll get in because he had a different kind of impact. It was unique compared to almost anyone else in the game. And yet when the game mattered absolutely most, he could play your game and be better than you. Like if you want a point guard who can score, can rebound, and can drop dimes, Rondo can do that in the playoffs.
Nationally televised Rondo. He was about that life. It wasn't just 12, 13, and 10. No. We're talking like 19 points, 14 rebounds, 17 assists. Like that was like, telling you, go back. The kids out there who weren't, you know, old enough to witness it. Go the Basketball Reference, do your thing. You know, look at this prime years, man. Some of these games were outrageous. And watching on, you know, primetime, Sunday matinee game, just cooking
and the dudes, and the dude that don't shoot threes, all of a sudden in the playoffs can go 3 for 5.
Yeah, yeah. He heard what you said a few days ago. He was about to go off real quick.
Exactly.
I watched a matinee. I think it was against like the Pistons or whatever. It wasn't actually televised or whatever, but he just, man, he messed around and got like 21, 22 assists. It was incredible. And I'm looking at the scoreboard being like, he has 9 in the, you know, second quarter, or he's got 15. Like he's just a magician out there, man, honestly. And you know what else too, man? The closest thing to a player coach I've seen, honestly. Like, remember the bubble in the Lakers? My man had the clipboard out. Like, listen, this is what we're going to do. Hey, LeBron, hey, I'm talking to you, man. I know. Hey, get over what happened back there. We're doing this now. And there wasn't a budge. You know what I mean? It was like, you know what? This guy's a champion. He's a veteran. I trust him. You know, everyone, he had everyone's attention, man. That was the kind of guy he was.
Rondo is going to be a great coach when he decides he wants to be a coach. He's going to be a great one. And I feel pity for whoever his point guard is, because you are going to catch hell. Because he knows that position better than you will ever know it, and he will let you know this. And if you can't at least be somewhat functional in what he's looking to do, he's going to keep looking and searching to find someone who can. If he gets into coaching now, when he's still relatively young, not only can he talk to you about what he's looking for, he can go out there and bust your ass in practice. Because Rondo can still
at you got time. Time.
He still got some of the tape where he can literally get on the floor and just like not just tell you what he's looking to do, but actually show what you what it looks like. And if
No,
you know, if you catch a little attitude, Rondo, he can go Jimmy Butler on you, like Jimmy Butler did the Minnesota
Oh,
Timberwolves,
yeah,
where
for
he just
sure.
basically said, "Look, give me the worst of the lot, bring him on my team, and we're gonna whip you starters right now." Rondo could be that guy. And so
Absolutely, man.
I'm
He could play
excited to see.
overseas. He could play
Yeah.
overseas if he wanted to, but he's just having a great time with his kids,
Man,
man.
look,
Like, you
if
can just
Rondo,
tell. I mean,
yeah.
he's got one, he's coaching one up right now, you know, his own offspring, and he's just enjoying retirement, man. So congrats to Rondo, man.
I mean,
Congrats to him.
Rondo right now could go over to like the Chinese Basketball Association and get you 25, 25, and 25, damn near. He could get you
And get
20.
a bag too,
Yeah,
right,
and get
Gerard?
it.
Like, you get
Exactly.
money now out there.
Exactly. Because they're going to be, because they will sell as promoted as two-time NBA champion, Rajon Rondo, you know. So it ain't about
And they
that, but.
remember, they'll pull up. They'll be like, "Oh, Rondo's here now." All right, season tickets.
And the
They'll
things and
pull
the
up
thing,
real quick.
right, and the things that he does as far as his passing, they're gonna love that stuff. They would love that
Nah,
stuff.
man.
So, but
So true. He's a
but
show.
I'm,
He's a show's man. He puts on a show, man. For real.
yeah. But he
Yeah.
seems to have found peace with where he's at right now, and coaching his kids, you know, his kids is important to him, I know. He's definitely a guy that I fully expect to see in the Hall of Fame. Maybe not first time eligibility he'll get in, but he will get in
Eventually,
eventually. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Well, that's it for this episode of the Big Three NBA Podcast. Your host,
you
Sage
did
Ray
it,
Blakely,
Sherrod. That
and
was
my
fun,
man,
man.
Joe Sway. Pavone. Joe Sway, where can they find your content out there, brother?
Oh man, check me out on Twitter at Joe underscore Sway. I can't wait for the playoffs, you know, all that ramping up as well. Of course, got plenty of coverage. CLNSmedia.com. Follow CLNS. On YouTube at Celtics CLNS as well. On YouTube, yeah, man, I got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Cedric Maxwell podcast, couple of special guests coming up, man. We'll have some fun for sure. But yeah, follow the Cedric Maxwell podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. You know, we got you covered for sure, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, this episode of the NBA or the Big Three NBA podcast is available all your down for download all your podcasting apps. And one more shout out to our exclusive daily fantasy partner, Prize Picks.
Yes, sir.
Remember, sign up now at prizepicks.com
Yo, don't
slash
miss out.
CLNS and use
Yeah.
the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. I got a couple of little something something riding on our good friend with the Los Angeles Lakers. Here, what's my man name?
Which one?
I always I re, Rui. I got Rui. He's been putting up some numbers.
Oh,
I got Rui,
okay.
and I
Yo,
also.
that's my dude, yo. Hachimura, yo, I used to tell Bobby, I'm like, yo, man. One of these guys, you know what I mean? Like, he's got a role here. I mean, he
He's
didn't
been
quite pan out the way I wanted him to with the Lakers, but he's got a role. He's got a role. I like him.
balling lately. And the
Yeah.
line right now is a 19 and a half combination of points, rebounds, and assists. I'm going to take the more. And I also got my guy Clint Capella. They've got him now for 11 and a half rebound assist combo. I'm taking more than that because he's going to give me damn 12 rebounds
Oh
alone.
man, yeah.
So
He's good for that. He's good for
I
that,
feel
man.
very good about my prize picks for today. I'm feeling really good about those two. So anyway, Joe Sway, as always, a pleasure, my friend.
Yes,
And
sir.
this
You already
is
know.
the Big Three NBA Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Take care, folks.